Welcome to Homegrown. I'm Brian Kahn. When we think of education, we tend to think of kids in classrooms with teachers learning something. And that's about where we leave it. We don't tend to think of the regional and cultural differences in classrooms across the country or the world. For example, what goes on in the classrooms in the Salish Kootenai tribe in northwestern Montana? We have with us three people who know something about that. Rhonda Howlett, Aspen Smith, Carolyn Patterson. Many thanks to you all for joining us on Homegrown. Rhonda, where'd you grow up? What'd your folks do?
I grew up in St. Ignatius, Montana, and my mother was a dental assistant right across the street from our house. My dad was a heavy equipment operator and mechanic, and his office was a block away from my house. We were into the 8-to-5 realm of working, and we were just always pleased to see our parents come home. And we would walk to school every day, my brothers and I, and enjoyed every moment of living in St. Ignatius.
How long did you go to school there? To what grade?
I started school as a preschool student, and I attended St. Ignatius until I was in the fifth grade. And at that time, my dad took another job with the BIA Roads Division in Browning, Montana. And so I got to move to Browning for my sixth, seventh, and eighth grade year. And then I moved back to St. Ignatius and finished out high school there.
Was the move tough to Browning? That's a tough age for many kids to move, and you're going into a different tribal territory.
Well, I have relations in Browning also. My dad is, last name is Matt, and I have the ability to make friends fairly well. I'm pretty non-confrontational myself, so I think that helped. Had a lot of good experiences there.
It looks like that expectation stuck. You ended up being a teacher, correct?
First and foremost, I think my priority was as a mom, as a daughter. You know, I wanted to represent my family very well. And I think that was an occupation that my parents would be proud of, having their daughter be a teacher. And I could be a role model for my own children. That was something that I thought about early on. When my children were younger, we spent a lot of time with them going to language camps up at Blue Bay and spending a whole, 2 weeks up there during that time with them. We would also go to the Head Start Center and have Salish language classes with them.
So when you said language classes the first time, that in Salish language?
Yes, sir.
Do you remember any feelings about that studying your native tongue?
Definitely. There was a time where you get to the point where you start dreaming a little bit in your language, and it just felt like, even though I knew that I was far from being fluent, there were words that no one could take away from me. They were going to be part of what I used with my own kids, what I used with my kids as I grew as a teacher, and was able to do some of the lessons and include language within my curriculum.
You said you learned some words that no one could take away from you. Hmm. I assume that is not just a casual comment, that has deep meaning for you or had deep meaning for you at that time.
Yes. Being able to grasp the language and be able to use it and be able to think in the language is really important, and that's how you can tell when you're fluent. And even though I knew that I was not going to be fluent if I was going to continue to study to be a teacher at the same time, and that caused a lot of tears, because when I first started working at the Arleigh School District, I was working in the bilingual department, and I worked with several of our elders that were language teachers. And I visited with them often. I helped them translate some of their stories into English, you know, and being able to know that was something that I wasn't going to obtain in my lifetime, to be fluent, made it feel like, even though that was true, I was going to have these words that no one could take away, and they were going to be my words.
Aspen Smith, where did you grow up and what did your folks do?
I grew up in Arlee on the Flathead Reservation, and my mother worked as a Salish teacher at Nkusum a couple years ago, and my father is a cowboy, and he hauls cows, like cattle.
Our listeners may remember we did a show at the Nkusum School several years back. So tell me about growing up. What's it been like for you?
It's been great. I went to Arlee School until I was in seventh grade, and then I transferred over to the Salish Immersion School in Nkusum, and the first day that I was there, Pat Pierre, one of our elders, he talked to me about the importance of the language, and at first I wasn't sure if I wanted to stay in Nkusum, but after his speech, it shaped my entire passion in life, and from that moment on, I knew that I was going to focus on revitalization of the Salish language. And so I stayed in there, and within a few months, I was understanding what Pat Pierre was saying, and I stayed there for the 2 years, and then I moved to Washington, where I furthered my education with the Salish language and worked with Johnny Arlee, one of our other Salish elders, and it helped me get the rest of the way fluent, where I was able to start thinking more in the language, and I have all these steps of fluency that I remember and I recall, and I'm going to be writing a book about it.
About
my fluency steps and also my children's, because I have two children now and I only speak Salish to them, so they're bilingual, and they are the first born bilingual children in 60 years out of our tribe, and there's only around 30 fluent speakers that are left.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We're talking with Aspen Smith, Rhonda Howlett, and Carolyn Patterson about Salish Kootenai education. Now, Aspen, you just said some extraordinary things to me, and I would like to explore them. You were in the just beginning, I think, at the Nkusum School. I forget the gentleman's name. He made a speech that changed your life,
yes.
Correct?
Pat Pierre, one of our elders.
Do you remember the speech? Do you remember what it felt like? Anything about it?
Yes, I remember what it felt like. As I was sitting there, I was thinking, I want to go back to public schools because I want to do sports and all this other stuff. And then as he got up, he talked about how very few younger generation were even trying to learn the language, and that there was only a few fluent speakers left, and that if we don't learn our language, then our entire epistemology was going to be lost, our culture.
Epistemology is a word that is obscure to me.
Epistemology means your knowledge. Like every ethnicity, people have their epistemology. So it's what you believe in, like your culture, your customs.
So he was saying without the language, you lose the essence, the essential historical experience.
Yes.
And that struck you particularly?
Yeah, because he talked about like the elders don't have very much longer. And if nobody learns, then it's just going to be gone and lost within, you know, maybe 10 years, it's going to be gone.
Rhonda, I'm struck by Aspen's story and yours. And it seems to me a similar element when you said it's words no one can take away, they are yours. Am I mistaken, or is there a similarity in the underlying feeling, meaning of those stories?
I believe that every person that lives on our reservation has a similar story. There's the ability to feel like you're an outcast or a stranger in your own homeland when you don't allow yourself to experience your own culture. And that's where a lot of us are. With the time that I spent with my family, you know, really moving toward the language, and I see it as that actual experience of moving towards something. That's something that you have to make a conscious effort to do. It's not going to be someone that's going to come to you and say, this is important to our family and you need to do this because it's important. It has to be a decision that you make for yourself. It has to be a priority. And it has to be something that you set time aside for and take away all the other distractions of the day and commit yourself to it. I know that wasn't something that I was able to do at the time. I'm 56 years old right now, and I believe that there's still time for me to become fluent. On the other hand, my passion lies with the children that I teach on a daily basis. Because I am not fluent, I do give them the words that I do know. I do read to them as much as I can in the language. I spend a lot of time at the Salish Kootenai College taking linguistic classes and being able to read IPA, International Phonetic Alphabet, so that is something that I can help them say words. We have excellent Salish teachers at our public school. Adele Martin is our current Salish teacher. She's the same age as I am, primarily. We're in the first grade together in St. Ignatius. Being able to hold fast to that language is important to us. And also to be able to remember that here in Montana, we have the ability through our Constitution to teach Indian children and all children in our schools about being Indian in Montana and about the seven tribes.
Indian education for all.
Yes. And regardless of how that happens, whether it's a self-contained classroom where teachers are putting it into their curriculum, or if you happen to have, like we do, a separate classroom where the children can go into the Salish classroom and she can make that feel like the home environment that she's used to, then those kind of things are very important to escalating the chances of our language being used into the future.
Aspen, I'm hearing you both say it seems to me that knowing your language is essential to your identity, to knowing who you are as a people. Am I misreading it?
No, I think you're correct. Our language is one of the most important parts of our being. It connects us to our ancestors and to an original thought process. And I think it's important for all of us to learn another language other than English, because we learn about that people, the peoples and their culture. And I think it's important for people to, it's necessary for them to hear another language, the language that's Aboriginal to their surroundings. And I think they should appreciate it and acknowledge it.
This may be a thin analogy in terms of time, but I grew up around Italian-American immigrants, and there was a generation that deliberately walked away from the Italian part of Italian-American, lost many of the traditions, and then the next generation went to rediscover them. And I can just tell you, having been very close friends with those people, that the rediscovery of their language, how they dried fruit, how they made wine, mattered greatly to who they felt they were. I'm 69. It's been my experience with a lot of different folks across different cultures that having a sense of who you are matters in sort of like a foundation for making the thousands of decisions one makes in one's life. You have a reference point. The implication of that is your ability to be successful in inculcating in Salish children who they are can make a difference in their life, a positive difference in their life. Do you believe that?
Yes, I believe that children do need to know their DNA to feel that sense of connection. And there's even studies done that children that are removed from their native community, a couple generations removed, they still do things in the same way. Like they have certain ways, like a thought process that still sticks with them, even if they don't know their language or their culture. And they eventually end up going back to their people and learning their culture.
Rhonda?
When Aspen talks about the DNA that we need to remember, where we come from and what our roots are, what our history is, who our family is, who our communities are, we need to think, in a sense, what it was like before it felt really like there was too much going on around us. There's a lot of things going on around us and situations that are much deeper than this conversation we're having today. But on the other hand, when you look at those things, the root of those becomes pain. And that pain comes from not knowing who you are and how you fit in and who your people are. And your people can be the people that you make your family. And we have to sometimes relearn how to do that and how to remember how to be who we were meant to be originally, and that is a family-focused, community-focused people. And that, to me, is the root of a lot of our struggles that we have.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We are talking about Salish education and identity with Aspen Smith, Rhonda Howlett, and very patiently, Carolyn Patterson. I said at the top of the show that when we think of education, we think of teachers in the classroom. And that's the way I kind of think about it, except teaching maybe different subjects. Are the dynamics in the Salish Kootenai classroom or your classroom, Aspen, the same, different, distinctive? What would you say?
I would say they're different, but in ways we have to assimilate to some of the Western education too. But I really like to use more of a cultural, calm environment for the children, because the Salish people, we were really about taking our time when we speak. It's a really slow language, and we would just spend time being quiet. There was a time for quiet where we had the children sit down, and they were quiet for maybe up to an hour.
An hour?
Yeah. One of my elders said that she counted like how long her yaya, her grandma, made her sit down, and she said one time it was an entire hour. And then when they were done, she asked, well, what did you learn? What did you see? So that was kind of our way of teaching, was a way of observing. We were really in the present of like, oh, well, there was a bird, there was an eagle flying in the air, or we saw some snow coming down, and like they were really observant, and they had to say what they heard, the sounds, everything. And so I like to kind of do that with my kids, where I'll either hum a song, a native song, where it's this, and then it's part of a relaxation, and we would sing that to our children, to our babies. When we would be in like war with the other tribes, we would hold our babies in a cradle board, and having them wrapped up tight like that is actually some scientific things that they found out too, that it helps with them being calm. So we would hum and hold them in their cradle boards, and that would keep them quiet, and or we would shush them, where it would be a shushing native song. And so it was calming to them, and it was just a matter of being quieting your mind. And in the classroom, I try to use a lot of native songs, and it seems like children really pay attention better, or at least I think the native students, maybe they feel a little more connection to that. So when I start off a circle, I usually start singing one of our morning songs or a cultural song, and they all just get drawn in, and they sit down and they listen. And when I talk, I usually try to talk really calm. This last month and a half, I've been telling coyote stories, because that's one of our traditions, is to tell our winter stories. And my students really pick up quickly, and they seem to be more calm compared to when other teachers that teach their circles, they seem like they're usually running around, but a lot of the children seem to sit quieter when it's more calm. And I try not to stick to a complete schedule, because natives more of just flowed with it. And so whatever the children wanted to do next, we just went with it, and then we'd speak language and what we could teach them at that moment.
Now, if I understood you correctly, you're saying that in your experience, your students respond more strongly to their native music than Western music. Is that correct?
Yes, and a lot of times I'll use a drum too. So that drum beat seems to calm them, and they just sit down and want to listen more, and then they start singing along with me.
Your educational system does not exist in a vacuum here in the state of Montana. It has an apparatus for education. Is there interface between the two, yours and theirs?
Yes, we have to obey their rules. We have to report back to them on our students, and now we're trying to make something that's a little more cultural, and the Missoula collaboration. We are starting to work together, and it seems like it's a step forward as far as our cultural background being implemented into the Western, because we have oral tradition, and that's how it's passed on, and our children are learning how to express themselves through storytelling again. And they're able to get up and storytell in front of the community and their peers, which is going to help them with their literacy, as well as help them with their community speaking skills.
Carolyn Patterson, you've been waiting patiently a long time. Aspen just referred to a collaborative project that I know you were involved in. Tell us about it.
The Missoula Writing Collaborative has had an NEA Artworks grant since 2014, and we have brought three writers to the Flathead Reservation of the Salish and Kootenai tribes to work in St. Ignatius, Arlie, and Pablo. And our writers go in for 12 weeks at a time and work in a classroom. And through this, they've been writing poetry and amazing poetry about the world around them, about their own stories, about bicycle jumps and machines that they make up. But a lot of our writers try to use Native American writers in their classroom as triggering poems for these kids to read.
When you say triggering poems, they introduce them to the concept through a Native writer.
Native writing. So, for example, there's a Scott Mamade poem that's a great poem called I Am, and kids use it a lot to talk about who they are, and it's a great way for them to learn how to write in metaphor. There are some wonderful poems by James Welch, and there are wonderful poems by Heather Cahoon.
Rhonda, we've just heard Carolyn's description of the project as she sees it. You're in the classroom?
Yes.
Tell us about it.
When the collaborative started coming into my room, it was over 16 years ago, and each year it becomes more and more rich. I've experienced over five of the different writers coming in, and with themselves, different personalities, but also with different styles and the ability to get the children motivated to write poetry and to be in a safe environment where they feel safe to write what they want to write. And when you look at the question that you had before with Aspen about how we interact as a Native school and a public school, that's something that is really important to gain that sense of community within your classroom structure so that the kids do feel like they have the safety to express themselves. When the collaborator comes in, they generally do some readings with the kids, but they also do a few other things that relax the kids. They might do some brain activities with them that would give them time to play with them a little bit. They might do some breathing activities with them that gives them their brain a chance to flip to the right side, and so that they're in the zone of writing poetry.
That's actually science, left brain breathing.
Yes.
How interesting. Yes. Fascinating.
Yes. And we know that language comes from the left side of our brain. But the creativity, artistic side comes from the right side. And so when we get to put those two together, magic happens. And a lot of times it's the things that kids can do spontaneously, including humor in their poetry and including a lot of emotion in their poetry. Those things you try to elicit within their other prose, and it doesn't necessarily come. And so it's fantastic to be able to experience that. The other thing that it does, as Aspen said, is it really focuses on our oral tradition of being able to public speak. Being orators is something that is a long tradition in our tribe. A lot of people have a sense of being able to understand the power of words and be able to express to the children that it's okay to put those words on paper and to read them back to other people so that they can go into their minds and hearts and process them, and that they can feel safe that they're not going to be ridiculed by what they put down. And it's thrilling for them that these writers come in and they reflect right back to them that you children are the writers in this classroom, and you're the ones that are doing the hard work here and giving us all this beautiful language.
Aspen, I see you holding a poem. Would you read it for us?
Yes. This is by Shreya. She's from Arlie School. She's in the eighth grade. And it's very cultural, so I think it really has a lot to do with our culture, and she really expressed it well. So I'll start off with the Salish. Sus but chapum til pumin et che te ispoos quadlamin kuts oi so quenchum et che te zikuk et che te spoosum mal til chedelp et che te yokist u chame anas na hukolahum Skeke ilsin wenchten et skete skka til in hul huilten. Stmus il wenchten et skete skalhalt il chumil hul huilten. Skabkapul et skete kwamkumt hul huilten il stchmasket. The steady beat of the drum is like my heartbeat. The fancy dancers are like bright, colorful dreams. The dirt on the ground is like lies that stay until washed away. The patterns on the dresses are like paths of life. The beads that make the patterns on the outfits are like the days in a lifetime. The feathers are like the graceful beings in the skies.
In October, we were transported up on a school bus by one of our bus drivers. But as we were doing that, we had one of our riders on the bus with us. And this was the Arley kids that wanted to come from fourth grade and fifth grade to share their writing in Pablo in front of their peers and parents. Hmm. We had a short potluck at the beginning of it. The kids were really excited and thrilled to be able to come down and speak in a mic in front of everybody. It was a very special event. People were excited and happy to see their kids sharing their poetry. Then when Aspen came on, it was really a special treat for us all, because the ability for her to translate those poems into Salish and then read them so fluently in both English and Salish really made the rhythm and the cadence of the whole evening very special.
Training by Alexis from St. Ignatius in the fourth grade. Tin qua chin kailt, hul sewanamis lu hukak zin, pawash, hoi in skukumistamin, ix me banunum kschum tausum. See like awis tzu lu hukak zin, uwawash il sinilt uesio stes an yam. Kultipamin zut, uhuist, ulhutip. Umentuist. Quam ktsin u khe u chintu esia u put chines kulpachin tem hanem in tilk pintu has mis des chines in khedli ha milk u enoen luin chep spooms. One day I wake up to the sound of horses breathing, then suddenly I remember I will learn to ride. Papa already got the horse ready. He says, talk to her, she can feel fear. I get on her, then walk, trot, and then she ran. I calmed her down and said, it's okay. I wondered, will she buck? Does she notice I'm scared? Will I always feel her soft coat?
Aspen, Rana, and Carolyn, I very much regret to say we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for being with us on Home Ground. And to our listeners, many thanks for being with us. We hope you join us next week. Home Ground is an independent production of Artemis Common Ground and does not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station. Post-production by Valtron Recording Studio. We welcome your ideas for new programs at www.homegroundradio.org. Home Ground is made possible by grants from the Liz Claiborne Art Ortenberg Foundation, Cinnabar Foundation, Humanities Montana, and the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication about issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans.